Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Dr. Paul White is the author of The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, and he's our guest on the show today, and I'm excited for this conversation because it's my belief that construction, trades, and home services are, frankly, underappreciated by the society we serve. Like, it is no small feat to build a house or create a landscape or do any of the things that you and your businesses do. And so I'm really curious to hear from him what effect that underappreciation has on our organizational cultures, the industry as a whole, and most importantly, what we as leaders can do to fix it. So let's dive into the 5 languages of appreciation with Dr. Paul White. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Dr. Paul White, welcome to Contractor Evolution. It's really good to have you.
Thanks. I'm glad to be with you.
I would love at the outset here for our unacquainted listeners, if you could provide just a brief synopsis of your life's work. I realize that's a tall order, but maybe you can give us the salient notes.
Sure. So an important context is I grew up in the context of a family-owned business outside of Kansas City in Lawrence, where the University of Kansas is, and then moved to Phoenix and actually worked as a carpenter assistant, laying baseboard and hanging doors, and realized that is not my deal. So moved on from there and got a master's in counseling. Worked with kids and families, moved to Atlanta, got my PhD, continue to work with kids. I have a specialty of testing people that have ADHD and dyslexia and that kind of stuff. But mid-career, some friends that were business consultants kept running into family issues because 85% of the companies in the U.S. are family-owned. And so they knew my background, asked me to help out. So I wound up for 15 years or so traveling around working with successful family-owned businesses, dealing with the family issues, working together, who's going to own it, who's going to run it, next generation, and kind of stuff. And that's where sort of the connection with the 5 love languages with Dr. Chapman happened. My wife and I were reading that, and it's a great book, sold 20 million copies. I thought, I wonder if this could help in, you know, work-based relationships. So I pursued him for a year and got through to him and pitched the idea, and we worked on sort of transferring the love languages to work, called the appreciation languages, and developed an online assessment training, and sort of has gone from there.
When you think about appreciation in the workplace, you think about conflict, you think about workplace relationships. From what you know about trades and construction and blue collar businesses, how would you categorize these industries? How would you describe these industries when you're thinking about those facets of them?
Well, what's interesting to me is that, you know, there's a set of, you know, sort of more male-oriented professions that we didn't know if it would, you know, really be accepted or interested in, and really has been, that we found that regardless of where you work, what kind of work you do, people want to feel valued for what they do. And yeah, we got to motivate ourselves, bottom line, but it's nice to know at some point that somebody else values what you do somewhat, and you can hear that. And regardless of the setting, the 5 languages that we identified are relevant to each, although they look different in different work settings. So like one of the languages is acts of service. And so an act of service, maybe in a trade setting, would be, you know, stopping by at the end of the day and helping clean up the job site or whatever, versus, you know, if you're in a school, you know, helping watch the teacher's kids over lunch hour so she can make some phone calls, that kind of stuff. So yeah. Seems relevant, and done it with minors and law enforcement and pretty much everything.
Were you saying a second ago that you thought maybe that this whole framework or this whole notion would maybe not be absorbed as well by a male-dominated industry that would be sort of traditionally less touchy-feely? Is that what you were
right.
saying?
Yeah.
But that's not being the case. They've sort of welcomed it.
Yeah, not. And you know, there's some differences across work settings about what languages they prefer. The you know, we had 400,000 plus people take our online assessment, and words is the most commonly chosen language, but it's less than half of the population. So if you only use words, because in our culture, we hear appreciation, we think it's mainly saying thanks or giving a compliment. But if that's all you do, you're going to miss over half of your team of what really is meaningful to them.
Do you mind talking a little bit about the research that you did? You mentioned sort of this assessment. You've had a whole bunch of people fill that out, so I'm sure that provides a pretty large data set. But I suspect that over the years there's been, you know, a number of different reports or studies or bits of right. research done on this to come to the conclusions that you have. So just maybe walk us through where you came to these realizations.
Yeah, so part of it is research and part of it is just practical experience over time. I mean, originally we focused on managers and supervisors and teaching them how to show appreciation. And pretty quickly, the feedback we got from workplaces was that, yeah, that's good, but people actually want to know that they're valued and appreciated by their colleagues as well. So we really sort of shifted that we teach team members how to show appreciation to one another rather than just supervisors and managers. And that's actually become more of a theme across time that we've done research across different age groups and generations and found that the younger an employee, a team member is, the more likely that quality time with their colleagues is important to them. Whereas for those of us that are older, myself included, we grew up that, you know, quality time was time with the manager or supervisor that, you know, if they gave you some attention, you know, that felt really valuable. But for younger employees, they want to go out to lunch together, hang out after work, that kind of thing. So there's some generational differences. There's also workplace differences. Doesn't seem to be a surprise that those that work in the trades, acts of service is more important than for, let's say, office workers. Words is still the most important, but acts of service creeps up a little bit and it's sort of like, you know, don't tell me you support me, show me, you know, or words are cheap, you know, do something in action. And so there's differences that way. And also across, we've done cross-cultural things because our materials are available in 9 languages. And in some cultures, like in Singapore, where the population density is just intense, helping anybody get a little higher in their career is really viewed well. And so an act of service that way makes a difference as well. Interesting, not really much gender differences about what people, guys and gals choose. It's pretty much the same. So that's been interesting to see as well.
My sense of things, having worked in and around this space for a while now, is that I think people who work in trades, work with their hands, work outside, I think that there's a very prevalent sense of underappreciatedness with these people, with these business owners, with the industry as a whole. So much so that we did an episode a year and a half ago called "Is Blue Collar Work Underappreciated?" And it did really well. We had a lot of comments on it. So
yeah,
that's just sort of my take. And I see that in the language that gets used around job sites. I see that in the prevailing attitudes that business owners have about the work that they do and the service they provide and sort of how well understood that is or appreciated that is by customers. And you can hear the same attitude expressed so many different ways. For the carpenter on site, it's sort of grumbling about how little he gets paid or how little room for advancement there is with this position. With the business owner, it's them being really frustrated when a customer isn't willing to pay the sort of the more premium pricing that they would need to get to the service that they need. So you can sort of pick up on this thread. I'm saying holistically, I think underappreciatedness is something that is felt in this industry. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you can comment on like what effect that has on an industry as a whole.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. I mean, I think culturally we've gone through a time period, actually over decades, where there was this overemphasis on college and education and those kinds of professions and an undervaluing of trades and other kinds of skills. And fortunately, I mean, partly because we now have a need and feel the need for skilled tradesmen, that's shifting and has shifted. But I would say law enforcement feels the same kind of thing.
That's a great example. Yeah. That's a really good example. It would be very akin to that same attitude, that same feeling.
Right. And that they always feel like basically they're complained about, you know, by the people that they're providing services to. And so, I mean, it wears on you, right? And I think some medical professions, lower medical professions, sort of the hands-on ones, not the docs and so forth, feel that as well. And to me, I mean, as a consumer, there's a great opportunity to encourage people. We downsized our home and had a home built, and I just appreciated the craftsmanship, and it was an intentional part of my part to go by and see and talk to the workers and thank them. And even we took pictures of some of the work they did with them. And I think that can make a difference. And I know that, not that that was my, I didn't have a secondary goal, but I know that they appreciated that. And I think, you know, were responsive to us for a request or whatever, because they knew what we valued what they did. So it wears on you. And so there's, part of it, I worked as a child protective services caseworker for a while. Talk about unappreciated. I mean, you're serving people. It's sort of like TSA. I mean, you're serving people. They don't want your service. And so it was really, we had a supervisor that sort of protected us from the outside world and encouraged us and kept us together as a team. And it really made a difference.
So I think a good framing for the rest of this conversation is talking about, given that reality is what it is. And yes, there may be some things happening in the economy and society right now that are changing that. Let's just take the underappreciatedness to be true. I think the rest of this conversation needs to be focused on how we as leaders begin to address that or sort of right that wrong inside the context of our own businesses. Because it ultimately, there's nobody else coming to save you. It's going to start with you, the business owner, listening to this, doing a better job with your people, and then getting your people to do a better job with each other. I think something I'm very interested in, though, another sort of context question, setup question before we get into practical steps, Dr. Paul, is what do we know at this point with modern science, psychology, testing, neurofeedback? I don't know what we have available to us on this question, but what do we know about the psychological underpinnings of appreciation? Where does this come from? Why is it so fundamental?
Well, different people would answer the why or the where it comes from at the deepest level, whether that's because we were created that way or, you know, developed that way. But the bottom line is that we are a holistic being. We have a social aspect besides cognitive and mental thinking and besides physical. And so that social context is important. I mean, we're raised in a family, right? I mean, and we have support that way. And then we have friendships and so forth. And so I think it comes down to, you know, what am I worth? What is my life about? And do I bring value, or does anybody think I bring value or have value? And that actually goes to part of our emphasis is that, you know, there's most leaders probably have heard about employee recognition programs. I mean, over 90% of all companies have some form. It could be as small as, you know, sending somebody an email on their birthday or getting them a gift card or something like that. But we really emphasize that recognition is largely about performance, which is fine. It's good if it's done right and well. But we believe that, you know, employees and team members have worth but beyond their performance, that we have characteristics that are of value that don't necessarily show up, you know, in our daily performance. For example, I like to work with cheerful people more than grumpy people, you know, and I'd rather have sort of a B-plus cheerful person than an A jerk, you know, who's just tough to be with and complaining or never happy or whatever. So there's that aspect. And also, there are times in our career that we're not at our best, whether we've got an injury or we're not feeling well, or there's big stuff going on in our family. We got a family member who's hospitalized, or we're having to deal with our senior parents, and we're just, you know, we're okay, but we're not at our best. Well, do we cease to have value as a team member during that time? No, that's when leaders can really build some loyalty of offering support during that time. For example, I have twin sons. We had them in Phoenix away from family, and it was hell. I mean, it was 2 years sleep deprivation. I wouldn't wish it on anybody, though. I love my boys, and it was fine after age two. But, you know, and I wasn't the best on my team. I was tired a lot. I was worn out. And I didn't need goals and rah-rah stuff. I just needed to know that people understood what was going on with me. So it's broader than just, you know, what you do. Because I think most of us would agree that we're more than just what we accomplish.
What do you think most leaders misunderstand about appreciation and where it fits into their working relationships?
I think we talk about some different misconceptions, and one of the main misconceptions is what the goal is. It's not just to make somebody feel good. I mean, or happy, you know, that's nice. We hope that happens, but we have tons of research. We got over 50 research citations in our book of the impact of team members feeling valued and appreciated on the organization, that tardiness goes down, calling in sick goes down, people quitting goes down, customer service ratings go up, productivity goes up, there's less on-the-job accidents when team members feel valued. And so it's not just like, oh, let's all say, you know, have a nice day and, you know, sort of this mamby-pamby fluffy stuff. It's really communicating authentic appreciation for who the person is and what they've done, so that they have a confidence and a sense of motivation to do the right thing.
So there's very much a measurable improvement to, you know, KPIs or numbers or metrics. I know you said it's not all about performance, and it is, and I want to be clear about that. But even for the most hardened cynic listener, right, who just only cares about getting the most out of the people, even for them, a case could be made that this is the right thing to do for their business.
Yeah, well, and I sometimes cynically say, if you're totally self-interested, you should do this, because research shows that managers and supervisors enjoy their work more when their team members feel valued. So, right.
So you got it. Why don't we just dive right into these? Like, maybe you can give us a bit of a tour, an overview of the five languages of appreciation at work. They will be familiar to listeners because of the five love languages, but words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, gifts, and physical touch. Maybe you can just paint the picture of what all these are, add a few thoughts. I'm sure I'll have some follow-up questions along the way, but let's dive in.
Yeah, sure. So words of affirmation is actually the most frequently chosen language by people in North America, 46% of the population. So it's the single largest group, but it's less than half. The key is that, first of all, it needs to be authentic. I tell people that if, you know, you're struggling to appreciate or value somebody, don't try to fake it, because that's going to blow up in your face and undermine any kind of trust that there exists in that relationship. But the key for it being effective is to be specific. It's not just good job. In fact, we've got 80,000 people on our weekly newsletter list, and we send out polls occasionally. We asked, what don't you want to hear? And good job was one of the main ones, because it's too vague. It does say you thought. You could say it to your dog. I mean, whatever. So it's about being specific. So you want to, first of all, we teach people, you use the person's name and say, hey, Dan, I really appreciate it when you pay attention to the details and get everything plumb and it fits right. You know, that's super. So your username, your specific, and then third is you tell why it's important. It's like, you know, if we don't have the door plumb, then it creates all kinds of problems with matching up with the floor, and then, you know, whatever kind of siding or whatever else we have. And so you tell them why it's important. And one of the things that in some organizations, you know, they have recognition kind of ceremonies or, you know, meetings, whatever. Well, we found that at least 40% of the workforce don't want to be praised in public, that, you know, going up in front of a group. Now, in front of your small team, if you got a small, you know, team that works together, that's different. But in front of a large group, people really tend to, a lot of people tend to not like that. So in our assessment, we originally just identified out what language people liked, but we found out we needed to get more specific. So we let the person identify what actions are important and which ones they don't like. So that, and from whom. So you may want to get together quality time and, you know, watch a game with your friends over the weekend, but you're not going to invite your supervisor, right? So, or have one set says go to lunch and talk about work issues. Next one is go to lunch and not talk about work, right? I mean, it's like sometimes you just get tired of, you know, at one boss that he took people to lunch and they just quit when to go because he only talked about work and wasn't about them at all. So words, a written one is fine, especially for more introverted people. And you can, you know, send them a text or email or, you know, even a voicemail or whatever. It sort of keeps you in control of what you say. You don't have to get anxious about it. And that works. And again, it's not just top down. It's about, hey, you did a really good job on, you know, laying the baseboard or whatever it might be, putting in the bathtub. It was a tough job. So
why do you think 40% of people don't like being praised in public? Because that definitely sort of jumps off the page at me a bit. We have, first of all, I definitely experienced that. Like I've been very, very blessed to get to do this podcast, and it's gotten, you know, over the last few years, we've built up a pretty good audience. It gets more eyeballs than I think we thought it would. And at this stage, that's a real blessing to have that. When I get acknowledged or we get praised about the podcast in public at a conference, at a banquet, whatever, which happens at least twice a year, I literally want to puke every time. I honestly almost pass out. And people can't understand that. And actually, we have this with people on our team as well. We started doing these, like, not employee of the month. I think we called it like playmaker of the month thing. We have like team huddles. And yes. I've had two people come up to me after. I wrote like these incredibly nice statements about these two employees. I'm not going to name them again to make matters worse. But they came back and they were like, I almost blacked out on that meeting. Please don't ever do that again. I will exit the company if you do that again without telling me. And I was like, okay. So anyway, 40% of people don't like being praised in public. What is that about?
Well, you know, it's different reasons for different people. But one is some people just don't like the spotlight. They don't like attention because that focuses on them, and then they're afraid they're going to do something wrong, and then people are going to think poorly of them. Another reason is that a lot of people don't want to take credit for what the team did, that they're sort of being picked out, you know, as being, you know, the star when it really was the team effort. And so there's that aspect. Sometimes in more formal setting, you know, you come up, you ask to come up front and, you know, they ask you, would you like to say a few words? And they say, no, you know, I mean, that they don't want to drop whatever it is, or they're afraid they're going to be sort of judged on what they're wearing. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of sort of fear about what other people think. And also that there are some situations where getting praised in public backfires to them personally, that there are people around them that sort of resent the attention and focus and that they got it. And so create some jealousy and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. I think you nailed it. For me in particular, just with the example I provided, I think it's the piece about the broader team involved. Like I'm like, guys, I get very, like I'm a talking head. Like there's a massive team. There's people behind these cameras. We have incredible people running ads to grow the audience. I have a content producer behind the scenes who now helps me get guests. Yes, I'm sort of like the public face, but you have no idea the infrastructure that we've built around this to support me. And so a lot of the times it feels unwarranted or unfair, and I think that's where it comes from. Anyway, it's a really interesting insight. So maybe just for listeners, it seems obvious, and you've heard anecdotes like this or adages or bits of wisdom like, you know, praise in public and punish in private, or whatever however the saying goes, it might actually be the case to not always assume that the praise needs to be public, and sometimes it might be private. It should be private. Let's talk a bit about quality time, because this is a really interesting one to me. In terms of my love languages, I'm definitely a quality time person. So I'm curious what this looks like in the workplace.
Yeah, again, it differs according to people, but also setting. My wife is an identical twin. She grew up in a family of seven kids. She's used to people being around, and they would do things together. So for her, just doing things with other people feels comfortable. She enjoys that rather than I grew up in sort of the divide and conquer. Let's, you know, maximize the impact. And that's not how she flows. So for some people, they like to do tasks together, you know, whether it's putting up a wall together or drywalling or whatever. And for some people, it's more just the hanging out time that, you know, time is really for a lot of us our most sort of precious commodity. And for somebody to give us their time is a big deal. But like I said, there's generational differences. The older workers and sometimes leaders think that, you know, this person got quality time, so I got to spend time with them. I tell older leaders, just because you have a team member that has quality time as their language doesn't mean they want time with you. Mm-hmm. You may be wonderful, you may be great, but that's not what they're wanting. They're wanting to hang out with their friends, do stuff with their colleagues. And the other thing, it doesn't take a lot of time. I had one CFO tell me, she said, you know, my language is quality time. But all I want is somebody to stop by for 5 minutes and check in how I'm doing. And after that, I'm booting them because I got too much to do. So, you know, and sometimes there's work settings where it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't really work to do the time during work. So it's either at breaks or lunch or afterwards. So, you know, you have to sort of figure it out what works for your setting. By the way, it's 26%. So about one out of every four people chooses quality time.
Okay. So here's a question about me specifically. I'm kind of like hogging the attention here, but I'm the one interviewing. So I guess I get to, that's the privilege of getting to do this. I can tailor these questions to my situation. I'm definitely a quality time person. But with my team, I get the feedback a lot that I'm quite like short with them, particularly like during business hours. So like around the office or around work, I'm pretty focused right. I'm like, I'm definitely short on being cordial and chit chat and small talk. But then outside of that, like I would also love to go to a restaurant later and then when we can close the laptop and we're sort of off of business hours, I get the feedback that I'm a totally different person. And I think that when I think about it, I'm like, it does take people in your life to kind of, you know, tell you that you're not going to self-assess most times. And I guess my question is like, what's the right approach moving forward with people that I work with? Is it just to set the expectation that, hey, this is how I am? Or should I be working on being more polite or having more time in the day to chit chat with people at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday when in reality, I probably need to be focused on this long list of tasks I need to get done? What's the right approach? Is it to sort of change the behavior or set the expectation differently?
I think it's some of both, actually. I mean, because you want to get things done. And you've got plenty to do and you've got limited time. And so it's reasonable to, you know, want to be efficient that way. On the other hand, I have to work at this as well. I'm sort of that way. You know, it's good for me to greet the people when they come in and take a minute or two, or, you know, maybe they've come in and I haven't checked with them to do a little something to move that way. But to also say, you know, I'm focused on getting stuff done and I might come across brusque. I'm not really mad at you. I'm just like trying to figure things out. But hey, let's hang out, you know, after 5 or 5:30. Let's get together and do something. So I think it's a both and rather than either or.
With this 26% of the population that responds saying acts of quality time is really important to them. You mentioned something earlier where it's like, they may not want to spend time with you. So like what, for that quarter of our workforce, if it's just sort of equally represented across the population, for that 26%, like, what are we doing? Like, are we scheduling wings nights every Thursday where we go out with them? Are we doing whitewater rafting together? Do we go play laser tag? Like, what is the right way to express in that language for those people?
See, it's both. I don't want to be self-serving, but I mean, that's why we have the inventory so that you don't have to guess. So it's figuring out what they want to do and with whom and being able to get that specifics. And we create a group report for a team so that you can get everybody's language and actions and share that among the team. And so you don't have to guess, because it's a weird conversation in our culture to say, you know, if I want to, you know, spend time with you or, you know, show I appreciate you, how should I do that? That's just weird in our culture. And so that's really, it's sort of an indirect way to, for people to be able to get specifics. And it is important to get the specific, because you can, like I said, I mean, you could, maybe they do want individual time. And one of the things that makes quality time go less well is if you're not really focused with them when you're one-on-one. If you're easily distracted by your computer or your phone or whatever, that's not good. That undermines the sense that you're there with them and they're valuable to you.
Cool. Okay. So the simple answer is ask what kind of quality time they want and whether or not it may not even be with you. Maybe it's with other people on the team. Let's talk about what's next. Acts of service. This is an interesting one. I feel like my brother's an acts of service guy, and I just started to key into it in the last few years. Like, he'll never say, I love you, I appreciate you, or I respect you, but he does really helpful stuff for me.
Oh, cool.
And we really, really, and we talk about that as a family. We're like, I think he's just an acts of service guy. So how does this work, and what does it look like on the job site?
Yeah, a misconception when you hear acts of service that some people have is, oh, like, I got to rescue this person because they can't get the job done themselves, right? That's not what it's about. It's more, and there's two sort of common settings in a service profession where, like, let's say you're a dentist or whatever, a whole bunch of people show up at the front desk all at once. What somebody can do, whether it's the office manager, to help out the receptionist to deal with, you know, the sort of this overflow, or you've got a time limited project that you work on, you've got a deadline, you've got to get this done by, what's something you can do to help make that happen? And again, it's a key is to ask them what would be helpful. And in our culture, if you say, would you like some help? The common answer is no, I'm good. You know, so really it's not, do you want some help? But what would be helpful? I know you're pushing on this. What could I do that'd be helpful to you? And whether sometimes that's working with them on it, sometimes they delegate a task to you. They say, hey, if you can, you know, run to the supply store or make a call or whatever to get, you know, the supplies we need. And it doesn't take much to have an impact. That's the other thing. It's not like it's really fairly unique situations that come up that, you know, they're banging away trying to get it done and feeling stressed. And if you can relieve that stress, again, part of this is it really builds a sense of camaraderie and loyalty among the team when people help each other out. And it's not according to position. I mean, it's like supervisor, manager, whatever, owner can jump in and help out as well.
It's sort of about the way I've understood acts of service when I'm receiving it, when somebody is expressing appreciation or love for me through acts of service, the way that it always feels is it sort of you are removing pain. Like there's something that is bothering me clearly, and you have, you know, made me a gadget or bought me a service or rolled up your own sleeves and made a fix or a solve in a way that now has removed something from the long list of things that needed to be done. And so it's actually less like excitement where I'm like, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed and I appreciate this amazing thing. Maybe that's more like gifts or like that. Acts of service is like, oh, it's relief. You're like, oh, thank God. I don't have to think about that anymore. Great. Thank you so much. Right. And so that's a useful way
stress.
To... What's that?
It's a reduction of stress.
Correct.
Because stress is essentially demands greater than resources in a time frame. And if you can provide some kind of resource that meets that demand, then you're really helping them out.
What's the percentage of people that respond to that one?
22%.
Okay. So
one out of every five.
Yeah. One out of every five people. So for those people, and for those people that we work with, that we know they're acts of service people, that's how they receive appreciation. You're making the case. Don't ask them the yes or no question. Do you need help? Cause they'll say no. Cause that's, you know, we have this sort of this duty bound culture and we don't want to share vulnerability. You ask an open-ended question, which is what would be helpful to you right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about gifts. The fourth out of five.
Yeah. Interestingly, so a lot of reward recognition programs focus on gifts and rewards and all that, but only 9% of the population chooses gifts as the way, the main way that it would be shown appreciation. And so, you can waste a lot of money on stuff that's, you know, they'll take it, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, impact them. And it's, to be honest, the most frequently given gift that's effective is food. You bring somebody a snack or you bring, you know, they're working outside hot, you bring them, you know,
cold drink,
you know, and buy them lunch, you know, at the food truck or whatever. So, food is number one, gift cards are number two. Interestingly, we did a survey. There's two kinds of people with gift cards. Some people want a general gift card so they can spend it on anything. Other people want a specific one, like to Cabela's or wherever, so that they don't spend it on other stuff, you know, and that you know what their hobby is, you know. And it's really about the person, and it should be from the you as a person to them as a person, not from the company. It's not swagware. I mean, I've worked with companies that employees feel like they're sort of a walking billboard, you know, for the benefit of the company, rather than, you know, getting some that they would like. And so, but you can sort of increase the impact of a gift by pairing it with one of the other languages that's important to them, whether that's a compliment, some words, or spending time with them or helping them out. And maybe it's something that, you know, sort of a special tool that makes their work easier. So, yeah.
9%. That's it. Only 9%, less than 10% of the population care. So I'm definitely in the other 91 because I'm a terrible gift giver and I'm a terrible gift receiver. Most of the time I get something, I just look at it and I chuck it to the side. It's so bad. I'm not endorsing this behavior. It's just literally like, it doesn't do anything. Whereas if someone like the acts of service thing, like I'll use my brother as an example. He made me these unbelievable wooden spatulas because he knows I'm meal prepping a lot these days. And he's like, I know, like I've been in your kitchen, this spatula. And he's a really, really good woodworker. So he made these unbelievable wooden spatulas and they're like the best to cook with. Nice. And I'm like, this is the, like, so that's technically a gift, but in a way it's weirdly more an act of service because he sees I'm like struggling with this thing and he was able to remove it by making that for me and providing that for me. But it's just interesting, like how different and one-to-one and sort of case by case all this stuff is. Somebody could get me this beautiful thing, piece of clothing, whatever. And I'm just like, I love like a toddler whatever. At Christmas. I look at it, chuck it to the side, but somebody does me a favor and they're my favorite person in the world forever.
Yeah. And gifts really, it is the thought that counts. It's not how much it costs. I mean, I have I'm a Chiefs fan. I grew up outside Kansas City. And a year ago, when they won the Super Bowl, I had a friend who was he's a TV camera, and he went out for the news. And at the celebration, you know, they do the confetti that comes out. Well, he picked up some confetti from the celebration and gave it to me. You know, it didn't cost anything. It was just he knew I was a Chiefs fan. It was a little something. And so, yeah, it doesn't have to be big bucks for sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about physical touch. I think this is this one I imagine is a smaller percentage as well too. And I feel like there's some real kind of like depends on the culture, depends on, you know, maybe you can unravel this one for us.
Yeah, it's less than 1% in North America and the US and Canada. And it's, you know, it's largely at first we like, are we going to include this or not? And we decided to for two reasons. One is that we know that physical touch can be a very meaningful, deeply meaningful act in appropriate relationships and situations. So like if somebody's just, you know, lost a family member or they're in the hospital and just a hand on their shoulder or whatever, but also it happens. And what it is largely is spontaneous celebration, right? It's a high five when you finish a project. It's a fist bump when you solve a problem. You know, it could be a congratulatory handshake for making a decent sale. So it happens. You know, there's the whole inappropriate kind of stuff that, you know, is there and you got to watch out for. So the recipient is always the one that decides what's appropriate for them, right? You know, a high five may be nothing to you, but for some people, I mean, I've had one gal, she said, I don't want anybody touching me anywhere, anytime, you know, and there's cultures, right? Like Asian cultures are less touch oriented, but our Hispanic and Latin friends, you know, they are more physical. They'll agree with a hug or even a kiss on the cheek for gals. And so, yeah, it's more just be aware that, you know, not everybody has the same norm as you do. And if in doubt, ask, but to, you know, it's giving a high five or a fist bump, usually not offensive to people.
So these are the five ways that people receive appreciation in the workplace. And I think it is actually worth mentioning. I'd love it if you talked a little bit about some of the tools that you have and maybe the assessments, or I'm not sure what's in the full kind of what's on the menu, but what is the best way for us to figure this out for ourselves first and then help our team figure it out for themselves? And then I got a follow-up question after that, but what are the tools available to help us diagnose?
Yeah. So the starting point that, you know, but the way this all started was the book, The Five Languages of Appreciation of the Workplace. It's an easy read. We got it on ebook and audio book, and you know, you don't have to read it, but it'll fill in a lot of gaps for you. And it's the kind of thing you can take a chapter every once in a while and just pick the ones you want. The most important, I think, is the assessment. It's called the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory. A code for it comes with the book for our basic assessment. We created different versions and have one for professional trades so that the actions and the language match, you know, versus, you know, talking about paperwork or clients or whatever. If people just email me at yesdrpaul@gmail.com, so yesdrpaul@gmail.com, I'll send them a sample report and also a sample group report so you can see what that looks like. I grew up professionally in the not-for-profit world where people give a lot, don't have a lot of money for training. So we created a very low-cost training kit that if you have an HR person or even a personnel person that has done any kind of training, it's a half-day kind of thing. Sometimes you do it 1 hour over a series of weeks that teach people how to show appreciation to each other in ways that are meaningful and sort of work it through. And I can include, we were written about in the New York Times about our work with a mining company. So, you know, we had truck drivers and miners, and we got different symbols, and they created, you know, stickers to put on their helmets to show what language it was, and been working with them for 6 or 7 years, and it's pretty cool.
That's a fun idea. You mentioned one thing you are really explicit about in the book is it can't all come from you, the owner. And there's an emphasis put on installing this as sort of like a cultural piece across an organization. So it's not just top down, but it's horizontal as well. And it's from peer to peer and from peer to customer and just sort of making this a more vibrant and alive part of our DNA. What is your advice? This is probably a great question to close on. What is your advice to leaders to help them do that, so it's not always just coming from them?
Yeah. You know, one is, you know, familiarize yourself with it. I mean, it's good if you're involved, but you're going to have some supervisors that aren't into this at all. And I just say, you don't make people do it because that undermines the perceived authenticity. But just ask them, hey, don't be obstructive. Don't get in the way. If you want to step to the side and let your team do it, that's cool, you know. And we actually win people over that way because they see that we're talking about authentic. We're not going through the motions. And And that's really practical. So, and then just give people the resources, whether it's books or codes to do it. We have trainers on our website that will come and do training for you as well. I've done stuff for some really big construction companies. I'll come and speak and that kind of thing too. So, it's just sort of starting and finding somebody in your organization, that is sort of excited about exploring it and getting them sort of a partnership. It's tough to roll things all by yourself. And so get a couple of people that are interested and help them roll it down.
This has been a really, really insightful conversation about appreciation, Dr. Paul. Thank you so much for doing this with us. If people want to find out more about you and the work you do, you've got a website, yes?
Yeah.
We can include that here at the end.
Yeah, our mothership website is appreciationatwork.com, and it's the word at appreciationatwork.com.
Okay.
And they can find stuff
there. We'll link that there. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Go Chiefs.
You bet, Benji. All right. Thanks.
Bye. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.